Get in on all the sports action and your chance to win up to 100 times your cash with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. This episode is sponsored by Audible, the home of storytelling. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalogue. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. I'm currently listening to The Secret Hours by Mick Herron. That's the standalone prequel to the majestic Slow Horses television series. I can't stop listening. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. That's audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500.
This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable.
It's Rog. And this is American Dreams, presented by Budweiser, a pod special series. It's a collection of conversations with America's best young male footballing talents that we're joyfully rolling out in the lead up to the Men's World Cup later this year. Last episode, we kicked things off with the great Tyler Adams. And now we're headed towards a trio of games in this, the penultimate window. It's really a seismic defining slate, including Sunday night, an ice rumble up north against a suddenly giddily ascendant Canada test. That's a reminder, if we needed one, that CONCACAF, though still played by prison rules, don't worry, that's not changing, but it is becoming ever more skilled, confident, and filled with challenge, and that the United States will be all the better for that in the long term. And so it's a magical time to check in with Weston McKennie, a delirious talent in the peak form of his life. We caught up with him at Juventus' training ground. For this, the second episode of Budweiser's American Dreams, we dive into his singular journey and honestly and candidly, which is Weston's style, dwell on the lessons about life he's derived from it. Here it is, my conversation with Weston McKennie. This is Rog, and it's a true joy to sit here with one of the most optimistic, joyous, elite players in the American men's game. A US trailblazer, blessed with natural talent, positivity, and buckets of swaggering self-confidence. I first met him when he was 18 years of age, and it's been one of the joys of my football-watching life to glimpse him grow from strength to strength, from Texas to Turin, where he now takes the field for mighty powerhouse Juventus, adapting to life in the Serie A as if propelled by an Accio spell from his beloved Harry Potter. To me, he's Clint Dempsey's heir apparent, an American who's always up for a scrap, unintimidated. He will not back down. Welcome to Budweiser's American Dreams, ranch dressing global ambassador. It's Mr. Weston McKennie.
What's up, Rog? What's up? What's up? Thank you.
Come va?
Bene, bene, tu.
Weston, you grew up an army brat. Your father, John, a staff sergeant in the service. And after being born into the world at Fort Lewis, Washington State in 1998, you bounced around base to base, city to city. And I wonder, what's it like to grow up like that? Arrive in a new place, settle down, make friends, only to have to keep doing it all over again, the perpetual new kid in every class.
Having to move around and growing up like that, I think it helped me develop a little bit of my personality of being a social butterfly, because you leave, you go to a new place, and you're always having to make friends. So, I mean, if you're someone that is easy to talk to and people see they can identify with you, and I just adapted quickly, and it's helped out in my life and also my football career so far.
Age six, your father moves to Germany, to Ramstein Air Base, best BX in Europe. You are age six and you live there for 3 years. And one magical yet innocent day, Young Weston heads to a local community centre with John Jr., your older brother. He's 8 years older than you, and you're both hanging out with some local kids. A ball comes out, and they don't want to let you play because you're too tiny. Your brother insists. God bless John Jr. Thank you, John Jr. Tell us what happened next, Weston.
The first memory I have moving to Germany, the family was unpacking the stuff from the car, trying to move in. I didn't know what soccer was. I didn't know what football was. I didn't know any of it. I grew up playing American football. I knew baseball.
America.
Yeah, exactly. So we had a softball, and we lived across from the elementary school that all the German kids went to. And I saw them kicking this big round ball, and I was like, huh? And I'm thinking the only balls that I know that are round are like a baseball, a basketball, a bowling ball. And I'm like, that has to hurt. So I take the softball, and I start trying to kick it against the wall. I'm like, what is this? So my brother made the first friend. We went across to the school we played, me being the smallest one, the youngest one. They obviously didn't want to give me the ball as much. But that's where I met my first German coach, David Muller.
Well, I think the nation of America owes an incredible thanks to David Muller, your coach. You know, he said he watched you, and from the very first time on the field he glimpsed you, he said, even though you were tiny, Weston was not intimidated. And from the off, you were barking from the ball. I just love that image of a seven-year-old playing with much older kids, but demanding that through ball.
I've grown up in a military family. I wasn't a shy person. And I was just someone I always wanted to be involved. You guys know my personality. I love the attention sometimes. And so just me being that age and being around them and growing up with older siblings, I was just like, yo, just pass me the damn ball. Like, I just want it. David Muller told my mom to come up. He just took over the team that was my age group of the village. And I went up there and started training. Did a tryout first in some khaki shorts. A polo.
Yes, yes, this is true. Under seven tryouts. And you turn up for your tryouts. You've got to make a good impression. Seven-year-old Weston McKinney in a polo shirt, khaki shorts, and American football cleats, right?
Exactly. Exactly. I was just there to have fun. I remember one of the games we played actually that day was like duck, duck, goose. And I was like, yeah, I'm fast, so nobody's going to catch me.
Muller decided to play you in his team, FC Phoenix Otterbach. And first game, you casually chipped in just the 8 goals. And even when he moved you up 2 age groups, you Weston still bossed the park. And these early stories, when I hear them, they make you sound like a natural. How much of your skill would you say, Weston, actually is innate?
Growing up in a competitive family, my mom ran track. My dad played American football and basketball when he was in the service. My brother did football. My sister did cheerleading. It was just an athletic family. And the main core traits that I have, I've developed from that. So maybe if I wasn't good at something, I found a way to be good at it. Or if I wasn't the strongest, I had a mentality that I was the strongest, so it worked wonders for me. So for me, it's just something that I guess I was blessed with and that I can thank my family for, just being naturally athletic.
And I love this part of the story. Jump to 2006. The World Cup is about to be hosted in Germany, and ahead of it, you, age 7, met Landon Donovan, Carlos Bocanegra, and the rest of the squad after a training game. And you've called this interaction in which you pose for photographs and they autographed your cleats as a, quote, life-changing experience. Why was that?
It was because moving to Germany, I just found out what soccer was. And then to realize that it was actually played in America was a bit, you know, shocking for me.
Were you like, what? Wait, we've got this at home too.
Yeah. And then to know that you could represent your country, you can play this big world sport and represent it on the biggest stages and the highest stages. It was an eye opener for me just because I thought, wow, like I always thought, okay, I'm going to leave Germany and go back to America and play American football. I'm just doing this right now just so to stay out of trouble, stay active. But I fell in love with the game, and then meeting them was just like, wow, like I can be that too.
What goes on in your head though, Weston? Because I've got to be honest, I still dream of playing for the American team. I'm still waiting for that call up from Triple G. But every American kid, every English kid dreams of playing for England. But something went on in your head in that interaction. You actually set that as some kind of goal.
It was just something that I saw and I thought like, wow, I want to be like them. All these people are here. Like, I didn't realize that it reached out and touched so many people just to meet these guys. They played a friendly against Poland in Kaiserslautern Stadium, and I saw that game and I was like, wow, this is crazy. Like, this whole atmosphere made me fall in love with the game.
You learned your early fundamentals in Germany, in the Ruhr region, which is football mad. But it also opened your eyes to something that many American kids back then had no idea of, just a depth of connection between Europeans and football, which is massive, celebrated, it's lived. It's almost like an element, earth, wind, fire, water, soccer. You know, that depth of connection didn't yet exist stateside. But you've said that what you learned in Germany stayed with you. Can you describe it for us?
Whenever you go over to Europe, and especially at that young age, the things that you have back in America, you walk around the street, you play pickup basketball, you play pickup football, you play tag, you play all these other things. But there it's like, you do all the things, yeah, but there's nothing like gathering with the guys and going and playing street soccer with them, or, you know, going from village to village and playing their teams. And it was almost like a video game where, you know, you have a kingdom and you go to other kingdoms just to try and conquer them to make them part of yours. So, you know, we're living in Otterbach and the next village over is like 15 minutes. And, you know, you guys go from there, go to Nuremberg or something, and you play against them and you win. You're like, we run this area, you know? So it's something that you live for. It's something that they breathe, they eat, they sleep. They love soccer.
How did that affect you mentally in terms of your understanding of the sport?
It definitely affected me a lot, just because I understood once I got there a little bit how they felt about it. But living there throughout the time, playing it and seeing not even just what it does within the sport, but outside the sport, how it affects people's lives, the friendships, the brotherhoods that are formed, the desire to win games, the desire to just go out and play with friends. That right there, I never had that before. I didn't have it. And when I got there, it synced and clicked.
Your family returned to America, to Texas, continuing with your football, soccer, even while becoming quite the NFL prospect. I believe you played offense,
yeah,
defense, and special teams. How good were you, Weston? Because I read you once said, I think I could have made it if I'd stuck with it.
I was good. I was really good. Obviously, obviously, good. Everyone can say they're really good at that age, but at that age, I was a really good player. I grew up playing it. I watched my brother play. I used to play all the time with my brother. I was living a double life. I was playing soccer games and my coach telling me, hey, score 2 goals and then you can leave your soccer game and go to your football game. So, like, you know, me and my mom are at the game trying to hustle and score or be winning, and then, you know, hop in the car with my shoulder pads and put on all my other gear for my football game and drive straight to the game, already into the first quarter, going straight into the game without warming up again or nothing, just playing. But it was something I loved to do. It was something that I was passionate about, and I always loved to compete.
I just imagine you like reeling off 100 yards rushing and then getting a call on the touchline that the team have conceded twice. You need to come back. You need to get back to the football game, charging back the other way. I mean, it did come to a point where that hilarious scenario of you flinging your football pads in the car on the way to the game was no longer tenable. Oh, you're almost like Bo Jackson. But in making the decision, you told your mum, I like soccer 99.9% and I like football 99.8%. In your mind, what tipped the scales in soccer's balance, Weston?
Honestly, what tipped it for me was just the enjoyment that I had and the connection between my memories that I had with the time that I spent in Germany and football. I created so many great friendships. I had so many great memories. And at some point, when I moved back to America, I didn't even want to move back. And I was like, no, America's not my home. Germany's my home. Like, I felt like one with soccer. And for me, when I moved back playing football and soccer, I got to a point where I was like, I love this game of soccer so much that I can't give it up. I don't want to give it up. And if it comes down to it, I'll give up football. For me, it wasn't even about which one do I think I can make it further in. I just love soccer that much.
Thank God, I know every listener will be screaming, just thank God you made that decision, Weston, that soccer became the major part of your life, age 10. And it's incredible, this. That's around the time you started to fly to international tournaments on your own. When I read that, I was like, oh my God, mind blowing.
Any chance I could get back to Europe, any chance I could go to Germany, I was traveling back to Germany at 10 years old, 11 years old, just to go train with the clubs. I was going by myself. I would go to the airport with the helper and no family and just stay there 3 months just to go relive my moments there and keep playing.
And your talent such that you're on the radar of US youth teams. Age 13, you meet Christian Pulisic for the first time, and the two of you quickly forge a close relationship. And I'm fascinated by this. Back then, two bar mitzvah age kids, you and Christian. At night, when you used to talk about the future and your dreams, really, what did the two of you think was possible?
We even look back at it now when we're in national team camps. To this day, we think like, isn't it crazy? We came a long way. Like, we were looked at as the kids that weren't good enough or wasn't ready or too small way back then when we first started and overlooked. And now we're considered the people that other people look up to. Our journey's not over, but so far we've been a good success story from where we came. And that's the message we want to give out to everyone. It doesn't matter if you're doubted. It doesn't matter if you're looked over. It doesn't matter if these people don't believe in you. As long as you have the right people around you, as long as you believe in yourself, no telling how far you can go.
But you two, together, you're both shocked by everything that's happened.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Age 15, a turning point in your life. You attend the IMG Academy in Florida. There's a lecture on goal setting and mental visualization. And the lecturer said, if you have a plan A, there can be no such thing about plan B. Because if you have a B, you'll never give all you can for your A option. God, that is the most American quote of all time. What clicked for you when you heard that?
Something you're told the opposite of your whole life. You're always told, make sure you have a plan B just in case this doesn't work out.
And so when you heard that quote, you just internalize it that it's going to take from that point on a single-minded dedication bordering on obsession to make your dreams come true.
Oh yeah, I was obsessed. I was not going to give up my plan A option for anything. It didn't matter what my family, if they would have said no, 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 it didn't matter what they said. Nobody could have told me anything different.
There is no such thing as a straight line journey to glory, though. 2015, you starred as a clenched fist. FC Dallas U17s won the Development Academy National Championship, but you didn't then make the United States Under-17 World Cup squad later that year.
Yeah.
It was a devastating moment for you. Other kids might have taken it as a sign to start looking for a plan B. But can you talk about how you dealt with that?
I think it was the built-up doubts that everyone had for me in that program. I was there a year and a half, and I didn't go on one trip with the considered A team, and I was always sent home. And I think that is what made me always, until this day, have a chip on my shoulder, because I had a teammate also that was on FC Dallas, Alejandro Zendejas, that always went on the trips. So every 2-3 weeks, I'm getting sent home and my friends are like, yo, what are you doing back here? And I'm just like, yeah, I didn't make the roster. Oh, but where's Zendejas? He's in Portugal. Oh, he's in Spain. Oh, he's in Mexico. Oh, he's here. And every time I'm getting sent back, I'm embarrassed. I don't ever want to feel like that again. I don't want to go to a team and not succeed. That's why I leave everything I have on the field. The one thing I've always said that I don't want to be questioned in my game is my effort.
And it's all from that moment of rejection.
Yeah. Because one of the coaches there told me when I was young, just pretend you're here, before I got cut. When I heard that, it made me feel useless. It made me feel like nothing. Like I didn't even like exist in their minds. And so my journey from that day, after I came back home, I got the call that I was cut, it was all about proving them wrong, but proving myself that I can do it, that I am good enough. And it wasn't an easy journey. It wasn't a journey I took alone. FC Dallas helped me a buttload. My family helped me a buttload.
For you, a big career turning point, or as they say in Germany, a Wendepunkt, was your move back to Germany. Dallas has had a pipeline of young American talent. You actually could have stayed there. You could have gone to the University of Virginia on a full scholarship, your dad's choice. But in August 2016, just 2 days after your 18th birthday, you chose to move to Schalke's youth academy. Can you point to words what you were looking for that was different than what you were getting in America?
When it came to the time where I had to make my decision about my future, about college, FC Dallas, going overseas, I realized I was like, my plan A option, what I always dreamed of, what I always said, what I always worked for, was to play professional soccer back in Europe. My goal when I left Germany was to return to Germany, even at the age of 9 years old. I left Germany, my goal was get back to Germany. It wasn't yet as big in America as it was in Europe, and you felt the difference. You truly felt the difference. I went to games, professional games in Europe, and I thought, like, I want to be down on that field. You go to games in America back then, and you're lucky to have 10,000 supporters out there. And I always wanted to try and be the best and play at the highest level. And I knew to do that, I needed to go to Europe. Even if I was 17 years old, I was an adult in control of my future, and I wanted to be responsible if I didn't make it.
And you quickly began to start, initially for Schalke's under-19 team. Then after just 9 months, you earned a first team debut. And I love the story of one of your early appearances against Bayern Munich. You were honest about how much of an out-of-body experience it was for you. You said, going on the field, felt like one of those moments where it's every kid's dream and you have people from America that take these birthday trips to see Bayern, but I was on the field. Tell us honestly, what did it feel like when you walked out onto that grass to play against players that you'd only played against on FIFA?
I wasn't actually nervous. I was thinking, you've worked your whole life. You've sacrificed so much. Your family sacrificed so much to get to this point. And you wouldn't be here if you're not good enough. And we ended up losing that game 3-0. But
I wasn't going to mention that.
We lost the game 3-0. But for me, it was still like, wow. I remember Lewandowski scoring a penalty. And it was unreal. It just looked like a video game. He scored. He picked up the ball and he's running back and he runs past me. And I'm just like watching him go by. I see just the floodlights just like shining. It looked like it was just shining on him. And I'm like, yo, this is unbelievable. And it was like already like 3-0, I think. But I'm in my head, I'm not thinking about the score. I'm just like, yo, that's crazy.
Your performances at Schalke had you on the national team's radar, but then came the loss heard all around the world. October 2017, the US national team humiliated in Trinidad and Tobago, failing to qualify for the 2018 World Cup. A World Cup you believed you actually had an outside chance of making. For fans like me, it was bloody devastating. You know, many players had their international careers ended that night. Where did you watch the game? What was that emotional experience like for you? What went through your mind?
The crazy thing is, which people don't ever believe, I don't watch sports, so I didn't watch the game.
What? Seriously, you don't watch football?
No, I don't watch anything, not even American football, no basketball, no nothing. But that game, I recall because I was in Gelsenkirchen at Nick Tadigui's apartment.
Another American prospect playing with Schalke back in the day.
I had slept the night there because we were going to wake up, go to train the next day. I woke up first. I was on the couch and I look at my phone. I'm refreshing on Twitter to see the results. And I just see USA is not going to the World Cup. USA failed to qualify. And I like get off of the couch. I run into his room. I jump on the bed. I'm like, yo, we didn't qualify. He looks at me. He's like, bro. I'm like, bro, get up. We didn't qualify. Even though I don't watch sports, it was still devastating also.
Were you devastated? Was part of you like, doors will open, opportunity?
I'm not someone that really tries to look for someone else's failure to be able to succeed and open up my own doors, because I feel like if I'm going to deserve, if I'm going to work to my full capability, I know I'll earn a spot. You may be unlucky sometimes, but then it's just not in the plans for you. But I would never say, oh, I wish this player gets hurt, or I wish they don't qualify, or I wish they don't do this, because then it opens up doors for me, because that's not how I want to earn my achievements. I don't want it to look back and say, oh, yeah, he only got that because so-and-so got injured, or because so-and-so didn't qualify, or so-and-so didn't make it. For me, I want to look back and say, he got that spot, he qualified, he did all this because he was better.
And that happened November 14th, 2017. You fulfilled your dream, first formed 11 years earlier when you met Landon Donovan and the other US men's national team players. You made your debut against Portugal as a 17-year-old. I wonder, what did that feel like to pull on a US jersey for the first time, to hear the national anthem? Did you allow yourself to feel a moment of awe?
I recall going for the national anthem. I'm sitting there, and it wasn't even like a full sellout stadium or nothing, but I'm sitting there and I'm listening to the national anthem, and I'm just like, no mean in any disrespect either. I'm like smiling, laughing in my head, because I'm just thinking, you made it to this point. You accomplished one of your goals. The best feeling about it was just to know that I had worked hard and I'd earned it. And also, this is kind of my grudge and revengeful feeling, is because the person that cut me, the person that said I wasn't good enough, that I wasn't ready, was the assistant coach at that time for the team.
Who is that?
Richie Williams. And I just thought to myself, like, I wonder if he ever pictured this moment, pictured that I would make it to this point, that I would ever be good enough. I don't hold any grudges or nothing against it, because if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be the player I am today. So if he does see it, or this, or anything, I just thank you.
I thank you from all of us, because I look at that game now, you were still so bloody baby-faced, but wow, baby-faced assassin inside 20 minutes. You pick the ball up on the edge of the area, jink one way, cut the other, then just slap the ball past the goalkeeper to become the third youngest debuting scorer in US history. What did that feel like? Was that just like any other goal, or was it something truly special?
For me, it was something truly special. Maybe for veterans and for other people, it was like, oh, it's just a friendly game. But for me, it was the start of my journey, hopefully, here. It's something that people will be able to know my name. People will look back and say, like, okay, that was that kid. It's not even for the fame. It's not for, you know, the glory. It's not for that. It's just for them to know I didn't give up back then when people thought I would. I didn't accept what they said about me. I just took it all in and used it to get to that moment again.
Your club career kept progressing. And August 2020, after 3 years grinding in the Bundesliga and being linked to clubs across the Premier League, you made a leap and then some, signing on loan initially for Italian powerhouse Juventus. Mate, just saying that, I've got to say, is amazing. What an audacious move. One of the greatest by an American men's player. It's like something from the Goal movie. And even you've admitted at the outset that you spent some time wondering, why did they choose me?
I was in shock, and I was just thinking, whenever you come to a powerhouse club and a club with Juventus' history, their background, their accomplishments, you think about their options as well. You say to yourself, they can literally go out and possibly get any other seasoned professional that has a bigger name than me, that has experience in general playing at that level. And I always thought, like, why me? What was it? Am I just a marketing source for them? Am I just trying to bring awareness for them? What am I, like, being used for here? But at the same time, maybe that's what they're thinking, but I'm going to go there and make the best out of this opportunity.
What goal did you set for yourself at the outset?
The goal that I set for myself was just to come here and play. I wanted to come and play because, once again, the doubters came back to life and said, I wouldn't play. You know, he's going to ride the bench. Why would he go there? He needs to go to a medium-sized club after. And I just thought to myself, you guys are doubting me, but you guys don't know that you're also fueling my tank. So I wanted to come here, put my head down and work and show that I deserve to be there, that I can do it and that I can play.
It is a different level than you were used to in the Bundesliga, on and off the field at Juventus, a different culture, a different expectation. What was it like walking into that locker room with Gianluigi Buffon in the next door locker, Dybala, Ronaldo? Were you nervous?
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course, I was a fanboy. I was a fanboy for the first meetings for all of them. But at the same time, I knew that was something I had to get over. You walk in and you think, oh, my gosh, like, here's Ronaldo, here's Dybala, here's Buffon. Like, I have a picture of the Italian national team holding up the World Cup in my room in Texas growing up. So I'm just like, holy crap, sitting right next to me every single day.
What did he call you?
Big Mac. He called me Big Mac.
What nickname did Ronaldo conjure for you?
Texas boy. He called me Texas boy.
I love that impression, because the first time, I'm going to be honest, Weston, when the first time I saw you celebrating a goal with Ronaldo on Twitter, I did have to double check. I thought it was a Photoshop, you know, and you are a sponge who learns from all those around you. What's the most important lesson you've learned from watching Ronaldo's approach to the game up close?
I can sit here and say that I learned how to be a better professional. I learned how to be more confident. I learned that the little things off the field is what makes you a better player. But for me, I think the biggest lesson that I learned from him, you have to also enjoy your career, to not always stress about everything. He's a phenomenal athlete. You see the muscle fibers and strands in, like, the back of his legs that just, like, ripple up and down. And you're just like, bro, like, what? Like, I always told him, I said, yo, whenever you leave, I need you to send me, like, your whole plan, whatever you do. Knowing me, I'm someone that's just like, I just say stuff sometimes. because whatever he did to get himself to that, it's ridiculous. And he maintains it. You know, we play a game. We get back at 2 a.m. He goes in the ice bath. He used to tell me and Kulusevski, he's like, come. I'm like, bro, I hate the cold, man. That's not me. And he's like, it's good for you. It's good for you. Come. We talk a little bit. We recover. It's good. You wake up, you feel better.
And it was in places like that ice bath with Ronaldo that became a specialist in Italian hand gestures. You are big on the mano a borsa, the purse hand. I've got to ask you, how did that happen? It's amazing. I love it.
I don't know. It's just something that I picked up from being here. We always make fun of everyone that does it on the field. And I think Chiesa is one of the biggest people that does it on my team. Besides me, like, he's always like,
last season you signed permanently for Juve, lifting the first trophy of your career, the Coppa d'Italia. And Rory Smith in the New York Times wrote, what's most surprising about the American's part of Juventus is not how far he's come, but how effortless he's made the journey look. Does it feel like that from the inside?
Oh no. From the inside, there's many people and people that maybe have not played professional football or anything that don't know what goes on behind the scenes. There's times where I come home and I'm completely beat. I'm broken down. I can't do nothing. Like, I'm on the couch. I'm just laying there. I'm trying to catch sleep. There's times where you're injured and you're just thinking, is my spot going to get taken? Like, I got to work. I got to get back. There's so many different things that can stress you out easily. And as a professional, it's not like you leave the field, you leave the training center and you're done. Everything you do is related to football, has a connection. What you put into your body when you eat dinner. If you want to go out in public and have dinner, how is it going to be viewed? Is it before a game? Is it 2 days before a game? Can I go ride my bike? No, you can't go ride your bike because it's going to wear your legs out because you have a game. There's so many things that go on behind the scenes. And I think that's something that I've learned and grown up with. And I've always known that it would be a sacrifice and I was willing to accept it. And so it wasn't an effortless journey. If they say it, make it seem like it, then I don't know how.
You'll take it.
I'll take it.
No journey's effortless. And in September, you were suspended from the US team for breaking COVID protocols. You apologized, but admitted afterwards that the experience impacted your club form for a while. The suspension, in your words, really messed up my confidence completely. Weston, what did you learn from this moment? What's a lesson that you took from it?
One is how to try and recover quickly from a situation like that. I let my team down. I let myself down. I let my country down. I let my family down. And it was embarrassing. And I came back here and I was just constantly thinking, like, how is Juventus going to take it? How am I going to gain trust? How am I going to get into the starting 11? And surprisingly, I was in the starting 11 the next game because not everybody was back and my confidence was already gone. The pressure settled in on me because I'm thinking everyone's going to be watching me and how I bounce back and how I play this game.
You really felt that?
I felt it 100%. And for the first time in my career, like, I was actually really, really, really just nervous, not just for that one game, but just for the next five games that I played. I'd hid from the ball sometime. If I could have dribbled, I would pass it off to someone. I was just second-guessing myself completely with everything. And I don't think I really regained my confidence until I went back to the national team.
It took that again to heal almost.
Yeah. When I went back to the national team, I think is when I regained my confidence, because going back to the environment that it happened in and seeing my teammates there and talking with them and the call-up as a sense of forgiveness for what had happened, it helped me out a lot mentally.
Since then, it's triggered one of the strongest periods of form of your career and then some. I've got to say, watching you and your US teammates weekend in, weekend out, scoring sometimes on the same weekend together, you know, Tyler Adams, Christian in the Premier League, Gio Reyna coming back at Dortmund. You're all doing it together. And by doing it, I mean destroying the stigma, which for decades has surrounded the perception of American players. You once said, Americans, we're known for our work rate, we're known for our drive, our relentlessness on the field. What do you feel you together are redefining the American player as?
We don't only want to be seen as someone that is just a workhorse. I identify with it quite a bit as the guy that's relentless, the guy that's a workhorse, the guy that doesn't give up. But at the same time, I feel like I also bring other qualities that actually set me apart from others. And it's not just my running abilities and my stamina and my desire. We don't want to be seen as just that. We want to be seen as players that can play, players that can create, players that can score, players that can make a difference.
We talked about plan A, no plan B. So what is the next phase, the next goal? First for yourself at the club level as an individual.
For me, it's just continue growing and continue trying to be the best that I can here. And I want to try and become a player where if I'm not playing on the weekend that people are like, why? I'm working towards that right now. And for the team and collective, the goal obviously is to try and win Coppa Italia now, go far in Champions League, and try and recover as many points as we can that we may have given up some silly points throughout the year so far, and get as close and qualify for Champions League next year as well. For me, I just want to be a big influence in that.
And now plan A for the United States men, who, please God, for the first time ever in our nation's history, will go to a World Cup with a roster filled with names known around the football world, players who play for Juventus, for Chelsea, for Dortmund, for Barcelona. Weston, how good is this US men's team and what are they capable of?
We're definitely capable of a lot. We also have growing to do, but I think it's a beautiful thing to be able to see these players coming from all these other clubs, doing their job, doing their work there, and then coming in, and each and every one of them have their own little type of swagger, their own little style. Each team that we play for has a different playing style. But at the same time, weirdly, we're figuring out a way and we're learning how to connect it all together.
So how far along are we in that process in your mind?
We're as far as we need to be. We can always grow. We can always get better. We can always exceed. But I think for now, we're right where we need to be.
Godspeed. And I want to finish by returning to the beginning, because your football story, which we know, when you were six, your family was stationed in Germany, you fell in love with football, but your father was almost deployed to Alaska instead, not Germany, sliding doors. Do you ever think about what path you would have followed if young Weston had gone to Alaska and never kicked a soccer ball in Germany?
Yeah, I'd be a professional snowboarder.
You'd be the world's greatest salmon fisherman or one of the great husky riders all time in the Iditarod.
I would have found something. I would have definitely found something to do. That's just my personality. I would have, you know, been part of the X Games, professional bobsledder. I don't know, but something.
It would have been immense. You know, your journey has been singular. What do you believe it is about you, Weston, that's empowered you to be the one out of the hundreds of thousands of young Americans who dream as kids of playing in Italy, playing for Juventus? What's empowered you? What set you apart? What ultimately is the characteristic that's enabled you to be the one?
One, my mentality. And two, over the kids at that time, I feel like I got a head start moving to Germany. And going back, all the things I learned in Germany set me apart from the kids that were back in America at that age, which allowed me to be looked at, which allowed me to be seen, which set me on this path. And once I was on the path, I was like a train that had no brakes, where I was just head first into everything and wanted to be the best I could and not give up and believe in myself.
God bless. Mentality and place and mindset. Weston, it's been an honor to hear your story. I want to raise this bud in toast to you, all you've accomplished in your singular, inimitable style. To more, mate. To more. To more. To courage. More.
Would love to share one with you right now. Got a game. Got a game tomorrow. So.
Godspeed to Weston. The thought of him in a midfield three with Tyler Adams and Yunus Musa just gives me indescribable joy. Roll on Thursday night, El Salvador, 7:10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN2. We'll be back right after the game, Thursday night on Spotify Green Room. Come join us, ask your questions as we break it all down and watch this space for our next instalment of American Dreams, presented by Budweiser. Until then, courage, America. Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit.
You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba.
And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights.
You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love.
Because you're the long-distance lovebirds.
It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know.
Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.